All right, we're back. And I'm Greg.
You're not James.
See my face. That's yeah. James. And that's Joe. I'm pointing at
him. Hi.
You're pointing at Joe.
Yep. That's Joe. See, there he is. At least on my screen, he's down there.
Uh-huh. I'm not going to tell you where that was pointing while I'm sitting here.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Nobody puts Joe in a corner. So if you watched a previous episode with Joe or listened to it, we talked wicked super chemistry about agricultural formulations, and there's way more to talk about there. And I actually made some notes so that we might pick up some of those other details at another time. But we just want to talk other stuff. We want to talk about beer. We want to get the honest to God chemist perspective on craft beer, on all things craft beer, on aroma science, on trends, on you name it. And Joe, your own palate and how things have shifted and changed and why have they changed? And then play all Greg's, make you jump through Greg's hoops and dance monkey dance with all of his games.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And Joe, I meant to bring up last time. So I know you're new to the podcasting world, but when you do this,
air quotes don't work.
Nobody hears it. Air quotes don't work.
Yeah. I can see.
All right.
I will say air quotes next time.
Yep.
I did. I thought
use your hands. Quote.
Yeah, that's the problem. Usually, if I was at work, I'd have a big whiteboard behind me. I'd be drawing all over.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I am paralyzed without a whiteboard. Swear to God.
It is hard. Especially when you're trying to explain some of these things, because it's easier to draw a picture sometimes.
Oh, absolutely.
You, me, and Dr. Balls used to have two-hour conversations, and nobody'd say anything. We just draw on a whiteboard.
Those are good times.
It's funny because it's true.
It is true.
His name was not Dr. Balls.
So it wasn't.
Yeah. I called him Dr. Balls because he didn't give two shits about what anybody thought of him or was going to say. He'd just say exactly what was on his mind. Even to the CEO, if he thought he was being stupid, he'd say, well, I think that's bloody stupid.
I'm fairly certain Yumi and Dr. Balls is a new show coming to the Cartoon Network.
It's on Hulu or Netflix or something. Yeah.
Yumi oh, my God. That needs to happen.
We could. That could be a sitcom. Absolutely. Anyway.
Oh, my. Okay. So, beer chemistry, I think, is what we're going to do.
Well, it's beer chemistry. I mean, everybody hears me yammer on about aroma science and the chemistry that's involved and brewing chemistry and blah, 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 blah. But I'm half chemist. Joe is full chemist. And so I'd like to get sort of let's just throw some of our observations and things we've talked about in the past and see what Joe has to say about them, about the industry, about trends, about, you know, just perspective on what's happening, and get just, yeah, get another perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, Joe, recently we aired an episode that we called Things We Hate. And that was so much fun. Fun to record, and the feedback on it has been wonderful.
Yeah. But not as cathartic as we thought it was going to be. By the end, we were kind of depressed.
We were sad about the state of things. It started with two grumpy old men saying, get off my lawn, and it ended with defeat.
Yeah, exactly.
But the point in bringing it up is that, you know, when we see these things that James and I hate, like the IPAs and the pastry porters and all this ridiculousness that goes in there. And the bias, I know from me, and I believe James from you as well, is that that's how you mask bad brewing, is you put a bunch of crap in there to hide things.
I think that's a way to mask bad brewing. I think also it's, you know, one of my favorite lines from the Brewers Brothers is, the line about IPAs are what a brewer makes when he's a lot of good ideas. And it's like, really? Another one? What the actual hell? And why do you need to pile on 4 different adjuncts and toasted marshmallows? Right? I don't get it. And Joe, I know that back in the day, you and I have a long friendship, and almost as long as Greg and I've known each other, not quite, but we were big into the craft beer thing back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and your palate's wandered, right? You're not so much into the beer anymore. And I'd be curious to get your perspective on that.
So some of it's probably just getting old. I actually like the flavor of some hops. I do not like overly hop things anymore. I still like a little bit of, I like bitter, but I like to have clean flavors versus before maybe it was more muddy. I was kind of, you know, like everybody else, you kind of learn, you're like, oh, this is new. Especially back then when everything was kind of new, mm-hmm. You know, Madison was kind of a hotspot for a lot of different things coming out. So it was nice to be able to try, you know, before then it was like, I had Guinness and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. What, you know,
transcendent.
I don't think I had that. So, you know, I was probably 24 or something. And I was just like, whoa, no, this is a dark beer that doesn't just taste, you know, bitter and like burnt. Like, this is amazing. And I still like Guinness. Some of it is, I'm not sure, I might actually have an allergy or something to the hops. Cause if I drink one fairly hoppy beer, I'm okay. If I have two, I get a raging headache, like migraine level headache. So like that's actually driven me away from that, which is why I drink a lot more ciders now. Yeah. But to get that similar kind of palate where you get some of the bitter with the intense flavors, I've actually switched to gin, mm-hmm. and not London style gin, but like botanicals.
Sure.
Cause you can get a little citrus with a little bit of that bitter, a little bit of pine with this, but it's not necessarily overwhelming and you can blend it out.
Have you had Garden Gate gin from Wollersheim?
No, I haven't had that yet.
Oh, I'll have to get you a bottle of that.
When I come down, I'll get some.
Yeah, you would like that.
So I guess my palate's changed that way. There are still beers that I have or when it's hot, like that, you know, it's really hot out right now, that I'll go and grab. I really love local one. It's called Day Tripper. Right, that's an IPA, but it's good. I probably lean more towards, I like...
That's from Indeed, right?
Yep.
Yeah, unfiltered IPA.
I like that one, especially when it's hot.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in Germany, in Munich, a year and a half ago, and had some amazing cold, and was it Dunker? I can't remember the style there. And then had Kolsch more on the western side.
Yep.
And fantastic, right? So I love, it's not like it's one style, but I think it's if it's clean, I don't like triples and whatever, like they're so heavy, I can't even one sip and I'm done. Like I don't want anything to do with them. I think you're trying too hard.
They are. And even to hear you say things like Dunkel and Kolsch, I mean, you're pulling styles out that 90% of consumers don't know what that is.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. And if I had a choice, I mean, I love English style bitters like a lot. So that's.
Yeah. Craig shows the picture ESB, yeah. Let me grab the ESB closest to me, Shrink.
I cheated. I have a bottle of everything right next to me.
Oh, just as bad.
I could just pick it up.
Yeah, that.
But
I'm looking forward to trying that one. But
we have some local.
There's only one ESB, really. It's from Fuller's, but saying. Yeah. Let's just get that out there right now.
True. But there are, you know, I've been lucky that way. We have some good breweries up in the Twin Cities area that have done some nice styles. There's still, you know, a lot IPAs and now same thing, all the hazies and the juicies and the blah, blah, blah. And I can't, there's a couple of brewers. My wife loves one of them. She loves Surly a lot. And I can't really drink their stuff. It's too over hot.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. Their brewery and their garden, fantastic. Great food.
Sure.
Beautiful place.
Great. Run a restaurant.
It, It, yeah, kind of is. And I don't
bash. I think their beer is awful.
A lot of people like it. It's way too over, just way over the top for me. So
a lot of people are wrong. Just saying.
They could be. I'm not going to tell my wife that. Because
the beer's way over attenuated. The gravity's way too high. It's totally not balanced. It's just an abomination. But anyway.
Welcome to my world, Joe. Welcome to my world. This is why I don't take him anywhere that I like.
Right. Yeah. However, yeah. Indeed does an outstanding job. And so does Bad Weather.
Bad Weather's really good.
Outstanding.
Fulton had Fulton one of my favorite beers.
Pretty good job. Yeah, not too bad. Liftbridge.
Liftbridge has had some good beers.
Yep.
Steel Toe, which is a smaller place, has exceptional beers, but they don't, it's not like a regional, or, you know, they don't really get out of the cities. They have some really good stuff.
Must bring with next time on road.
I know. Usually, my usual drive down to Madison includes filling my trunk with random assortments of beers because.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because and then James.
James. And then on the way back, I usually grab.
Well, there's a gas station pie in there too, at least, usually.
Oh, sure.
At least one.
Yeah. At least a gas station pie.
Because it's Wisconsin.
Right.
Cheese gets filled up on the way back. Maybe some sausage.
It's easy peasy. We're good neighbors.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So it goes. I like actually many different things if they're done well. And there's a lot. You're like, oh, I like this style. And I'll try. I can spit it out.
Is there a style that you won't even try? Anything that you just do not like?
Doubles, triples, any Russians. Russians, I hate. Any Russian?
Really?
Oh,
interesting.
Just is it too heavy in the mouth? Like the body's too heavy?
I think so.
And that must be it because you wouldn't like the Belgian triples or doubles or quads or anything like
that. I tried one once and I literally, like, I knew the wife of somebody working at the brewery at the time and I literally was like, I think there's something wrong with this.
Oh, I remember that.
It was like a candied Belgian.
Oh God!
And I was like, "There's something wrong with this." And they, to their credit, they were like, they took it back. I like one maybe. I was like, "Oh, maybe it's that bottle." And I tried another one. It was like, "Oh God!" I literally poured it out. gave them a 4-pack back. Yeah. And to their credit, they gave me a 6-pack of their main one, which I liked. And they said, nope, it's what it's supposed to be. And I'm like, are you sure? And I, and some of that, I mean, this gets into like the chemistry part, like some of it's the really high sugar loading, but some of it was, I'm pretty sure it was the yeast.
Yeah.
And from that one, I've had other Belgians style. And I actually do think it's the yeast that they use because whenever I've had one, it's been off to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can't explain what off means. It just didn't taste good. Mm-hmm. And I've come to realize it's probably it could be just style, but generally the yeast. Now, I do like some of the, what do they call that? The framboise or the
lambics.
Fruity lambics. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do like lambics. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they use the same style of yeast, then maybe that's out the window or the fruit just covers it. I don't know.
No, the whole lambic process is souring. So there's bacteria involved and not, so don't confuse the two of those, but I think you're onto something. There's a friend of mine, Joris, who's a hop grower in Belgium, and he also has a nano brewery. And he was here 3 years ago to visit, and I drove him around. He came through Chicago, had a good time. He brought me some of his beer that he made from his brewery, and for 750 mil bottles that we promptly drank in one sitting. but totally not over attenuated, no added sugar, malt or dextrose or anything like that. Just very square, well-balanced Belgian type beer with native Belgian type yeast. And what I came to realize is that, and he told me this before he came, but you got to experience it. The Belgian beer that's made in the U.S. is not Belgian beer. It's sort of like Mexican food that you get in the U.S. is not Mexican food. And we've had Mexican food. And yeah, no, Taco Bell is not a good representation of Mexican food. So I was the same as you, Joe. I was like a Belgian. No, no, hell no, no way. Until Joris gave me a education on real Belgian beer because I hadn't visited Belgium. And wow. I'm like, holy crap, this is amazing. He said, yeah, you're not going to get it in the States, but if you can find this brewer, this brewer, this brewer. And I think I've told you guys before, so there's a beer bar in Madison called the Malt House. And it's one of my old man caves where, you know, there's no TVs and no music, it's no kids. It's awesome. And that's all they do is great beer, domestic and imported. And I can go there and get some of that Belgian beer that's well balanced. It's got an interesting edge to it. It's not sour. It's not funky. It's not syrupy, spicy clove and banana or any of that bullshit going on. But it is different. And that, to me, is Belgian beer.
Yeah. I think another style, like, I mean, I do. So for strong play, I mean, it's not like I don't like strong flavors because maybe it's not strong to some people, but like, I really like ryes, like different style rye beers.
Yep.
Like, me and too. Your friend Scott making Square Pig.
Oh, Square Pig.
It's so good. It's ridiculously good. Right. It's one of the, I remember when I had that, I was like, this is one of the finest things I've ever put in my mouth.
It's transcendent. Can we have that as the bumper for the end of this episode?
One of the finest things I've ever put in my mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. Square Pig is divine. 40% rye in that bill. The mash is so freaking thick you could walk across it.
I've had Square Pig. It is fantastic.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've as you mentioned, the one up here, the I forget the name of it, but there are a couple up here that have really decent ryes too. Like, and you don't find them everywhere, which is, I think that one, you have to be a really good brewer to pull that off because of that balancing the rye intensity. But when it's done right, it's really quite something.
Well, that, and you can wreck your mash because you can get a stuck fermentation because the beta glucans that are in the rye can turn your mash tun into a solid chunk of cream of wheat if you're not careful. And so doing step mashing or decoction mashing and making sure you're doing beta glucan rests in order to get that high amount of rye, certainly 40%, that's ridiculous. That's why most brewers don't go any higher than 10 because you get that stuck mash problem. But if you can get it balanced, you get a lot of those spicy notes that come out of that rye that can be kind of peppery, that can be overwhelming for some folks.
And so I was going to say, so kind of going, okay, I'm jumping back a little bit here to our yeast talk. Like, like going back several years, we've talked to many brewers about yeast choice, right? And there, if you look at winemaking, it's actually kind of fascinating how they've bred the yeast to release compounds, which can be good or bad depending on how much. But a lot of these thiol compounds, I know James has talked about those before, mercaptans and other things that can.
See, Greg, I didn't make those words up.
Yeah,
I did not accuse you of making those words up. There are other words that I know you
made. Okay. So we're clear.
So we're clear. That you can actually release from grapes, right? And they drive the black currant, the tropical, a lot of these flavor profiles. Those compounds are locked away, right? So they're not just sitting free in the plant. Oftentimes, to get them to come out, you need an enzyme to basically cleave them from whatever they're locked on, whether it be a protein or some other cellular structure within the plant. And by releasing them, then they can be extracted into the solution or brought into the solution during the whole brewing process. And with the grapes, they figured this out, and that's why you can take the same grapes and use three different yeasts and get three completely different flavored wines out of it. I know that happens a little bit in brewing, but I don't think it's been played nearly as much as it could be because things, and now I'm going to completely screw up the thing, but, Cascades, for example, have some of these components to them. They're just not well.
They've got 60%. They have 60%. Cascade has 60% the MMP, 4-MMP, which is the characteristic thiol that's in mercaptan that's in Simcoe. So people say, oh, you know, what, back 6-7 years ago, nobody could get Simcoe. And we're saying, well, use Cascade. Well, Cascade doesn't have any of that character. Well, no, not if you dry it above 110 degrees. You dry full of thiols and mercaptans off. But if you get a hold of some Cascades that are dried with no heat, i.e. what we propose, yeah, then you have those high levels of 4-MMP that give you very Simcoe-like character. So there's that. There's the impact of the horticulture and processing on those aroma compounds. But then, Joe, to your point, talking about how you can have these aroma compounds that aren't free until they're cleaved, like a glutamate, right? A glutamate and then an aroma compound, linalool glutamates or neural glutamates, citronellol glutamates, that require that cleave. That has not been played with nearly enough in brewing. And it's so new that people don't even know how to measure it or how to capture the information they need to know to manipulate.
Yeah. And it's often not cheap, right? So if you're a small brewer, you're probably not going to spend a few $100 on yeast, right? Like if you know I'm making this vats of wine or whatever, I'm going to use it like to try and experiment. That's hard. And the big guys aren't doing it because they don't have to, because they can afford or they can get their hands on the materials they want. So, I mean, I don't blame people for not doing it, but I think it's one of those areas where there could be a lot of exploration. Yeah. I mean, we'll go down this line a little bit. I mean, James and I worked with several brewers on, you know, extraction. I know he's talked about that before too, but how do you get the maximum amount of your, you know, these essential oils out of the plant without blowing them all off or having them completely oxidize mm-hmm. away so you don't have them anymore? You know, so it's, does it need to sit there for 3 days? No. Does it need to sit there for 3 hours? Maybe. What temperature are you looking at? 100 degrees C, which is boiling, or are you looking at 50? Or are you looking at 30? Like, that all can change these profiles, because I know it's been talked about with volatility and oxidation. So with Gorse Valley, when we would talk to brewers all the time, is I would often, and this goes back into the kind of the quality standpoint, I'd often talk about, like, why would you want to ruin your palette? Like, you've got a palette of paint. Like, you can paint this wall whatever you want. Why would you take it and mush all of them together and make brown before you ever started, right? You want to keep these things as close to what you're getting as possible. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you may want to cause a reaction. You may want to put it in so it does get oxidized, because that will give you a different flavor profile, but you want to control that. And if you're just taking whatever, all that's been taken away from you and you're only left with what you have left. You don't have that whole palette to start with, which is part of why we always talk about lower temperature drying and making sure things were sealed properly, kept cold, because oxidation, which is just reacting with the air, it changes things. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see that at your house, you get yellowing on walls, or, you know, dashboards of cars get faded, things like that. That's due to UV light, but it's oxidation of that surface. So protecting things from that is a great way to keep your options open, let's just say. As a chemist, you want, especially if I do formulation work for a living, multiple different areas, and you don't want things to happen until you want them to happen when you put things together. Mm-hmm. Right. You don't want, if you do, you're not in control of what you're dealing with. And it's tricky as a brewer, because it's a dynamic system. Like, it's the whole process is dynamic, right? Everything's changing. You try to be as the best brewers are maniacally consistent with what they do, because 10 minutes here or there can actually have a huge impact on the quality coming out the other end. So
the they figured it out by doing. And, you know, this whole thing we say, you know, hey, brewing is 40% science, 60% art. And then sometimes when we hear that, I feel like that's a cop out, because you look at like the winemaking industry and people say, oh, wine is such a simpler methodology. Well, I'm not going to say which one's, you know, more complex or more simple, but in general, to say that, well, you know, I'm going to do this, that, or the other thing inside of the sphere that I know how to do as a brewer, and the rest of it's black magic. It's like, I call bullshit on that. It's like, we know the individual aspects of what's going on, and maybe the individual master brewer, and we certainly know that Dan at New Glarus does this, takes copious notes and experiments, and he knows his system inside and out as much as humanly possible, which gives him a huge leg up on his competition. But what about everybody else? What do? They throw marshmallows in it, or glitter, or I don't know, balloons, or whatever else they're going to put in it in order to try and get an edge, instead of focusing on the why and the how of the system.
Yeah. I mean, it's on that. No, I completely agree. It's hard to be that exacting. I mean, that's why they're like, every brewery doesn't just have the a beer or multiple beers that knock your socks off, right? There's always those people who rise to the top. I mean, you mentioned Dan and Scott Manning. You have these guys locally that you look at their awards. Like, they're always towards the top. And Madison's not a big town relative to the rest of the country, but they're exacting, right? When they get to that part, now they have creativity and what profile am I going for? But so they know what to ask and what to look for in their starting materials. And then they use their process then to drive out these wonderful outcomes. So yeah, I think you mentioned one of the podcasts I was listening to where they were on Dan and how, you know, selecting the German style hops, or even when you select our hops and nope, these aren't quite right for this. I mean, exacting. And I know that happens at some of the big breweries too, but they can hide it because you can, once you go to extracts and other things, you know, if you're using that or if you own your hop yard, basically you can drive some of that.
Craig, what do you see? So given what Joe just kind of explained to us about the science of brewing and how it's expressed, is that even a concern in your area of the country?
I would say so. I think it's just like anywhere. You've got your brewers who, like a Dan Carey, who is a, I hate to say scientist, but yeah. I
mean, oh, wait, hey, now, come on. You said that like it was a bad word.
Well,
it gets me paid.
Right?
In the sense that he is, you know, you used the phrase before, he's taking copious notes. He is
more, he's more scientist than artist. And I think that has the bad connotation, right?
And you know, you're using artist. I mean, there's artist, there's the brilliance of artist, and then there's the artist of, let's throw some more crap in here and see what happens. I think that's unfortunately when they say those things about 60% science, 40% art, that's what they mean by art. It's, I've got some Oreo crumbs that were left over from my lunch. I'm going to sweep them in and see what it does.
Right. Hey, what are you going to do with all those old oyster shells? Can I have those?
And the oyster shell was born.
Right.
So, I mean, it's easy to bash on that, but like, I do think there is a part of that and when dealing with adjuncts, right? Because there's a critical eye to that where I like this flavor profile. I like how this mouthfeel is, whatever that is. I want to impart that in this beer. Okay, I can be very traditionalist with it and look for, you know, try to find the right blend of hops that gets me that, knowing especially if you have the back, you know, like anything else, you have to have that background knowledge of this one gives me this character, this one gives me that character, this one, you know, down the line so that I can mix them together and get what I want. But if you're like, you know, I really want to pull the black currant through on this, you could just add black currant, right? Like there's like yeah. You have to be careful you don't overwhelm and things with that, but
I think that's something I never understood. We talked to brewers. We were looking at mixing botanicals with hot pellets in order to get a given character, right? And there was a huge, you know, resistance to that. Like it was somehow an abomination, right?
Yeah,
to what you're doing.
Oreos,
but yet,
in their beer.
Exactly. And so we're like, no, wait a minute. So I can take a base hop and mix other botanicals into it to give you exactly the profile you're looking for, but somehow that's unnatural. Yet you will use yeast from your beard in your beer. And that is innovative, right? And edgy. I don't get it.
And I think this is complete speculation, but I actually think some of the German beer rules, people know them, right? They sort of know them, they know about them, and they think, oh yeah, well, we got to be like, you know, that's where beer came from, you know, that's, we got to be like that, we got to be pure. And then yet, like, oh, I'm gonna throw some candy sugar in here, and I've never understood that. I mean, and you guys have talked about, you know, like in the fall you get pumpkin beer, and when do you make that and how you make it and when it can be really good, but it's like you're never going to get that from a hop. You're never going to get, I mean, and some people don't like them, but they're shandies out there right now, right? They're blends.
Yep.
You're getting there by adding a juice with a beer.
Yep.
Right. I have well, something in my fridge. You guys are out by Leinenkugels. I mean, they're the shandy kings.
Right.
That's.
Oh, yeah.
We see them here.
Shandies are a thing. Rattlers are a thing. And for those of you who are drinking boozy seltzer water, try a rattler. You might like it. Anyway. We don't want to digress, but Greg, I think we ought to hit Joe with some of these,
some of our beer or no
questions. If you got any.
I do. I've got a few. So Joe, we do this on occasion, and these are, some of them are real beer names. Some of them are, it's just crap we made up. So you need to tell the difference. Tell us if any of these are an actual beer or just something stupid we came up with that someone out there should make into a beer. Okay?
You can do it, Jojo.
You can. So the first one.
Wait, am I supposed to get it right or wrong?
You're supposed to get them right. So us if these are beer. Tell us if these are beers.
Or no.
That's your question. It's a beer or no.
Okay.
This is a yes or no situation. It's not complicated.
We can make it complicated.
Yes, that is the answer.
So you're a scientist, Boolean, binary, you know, these are
okay.
One or zero.
Okay.
So the first one, blast from your spice weasel.
I don't think it is, but I think it should be.
Okay. This is something James said about 45 minutes ago. So
yes.
that's what I wrote it down. So that is not beer.
It's got to be some sort of overspiced Belgian Trappel for Joe. It's like.
Yeah, one sip and I dump the rest on the drain.
A Christmas Trappel. That's what it is.
Oh, boy. Last your spice weasel. Uh-huh. I put it right on top of the list as soon as you said
it. Nice.
Okay. So you mentioned this style before. Creepy Uncle Dunkle.
That's probably gotta be. That's gotta be real.
That is a real beer. The Moon Underwater Pub and Brewery. Very good.
Where?
The Moon Underwater Pub and Brewery. I don't have the location here. We have to find it.
We have to hunt it down.
Yeah. Hold on.
That's in the basement.
Uh huh. Because I am a creepy uncle, and I like Dunkles.
They're in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Oh, St. Pete's. Changed my mind. Anyway.
So they're all COVID positive right now. But
yeah,
when they clear that up, you can go back and try one of their beers.
Yeah, but.
So next one here, Naughty Nurse IPA.
Oh, that's real.
Yeah, that's real. That's right near me. That's at City Steam Brewery here.
City, yep, very good beer.
Yep, yep. Okay, another style you mentioned before, King Kong Kolsch.
Seems like there'd be something in New York that somebody would make that. I'll say yes, even though it's probably no.
Yep.
Wah, wah.
Somebody should make one if you're in New York.
They should. Yep. They should
need to make that.
Yeah.
Hanging off the Empire State Building, holding a mug. I mean, that's it. Sounds.
Yeah, of course. Gimmick. Yeah.
Sounds like a all gimmick. Royalties to Greg.
Mm-hmm. Empire Brewing Company, right there.
Oh, perfect. Mm-hmm. Okay, next one. Don't Fear the Porter.
I'm going to say yes because I like it so much.
I made that one up. But
that was good.
Real. I wish it was real.
That one, they need to make that one in like Fargo and sell it out in the middle of nowhere where they, you know, it's, well, that's dark. Just don't care. It's fine.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, they don't go for that there. What, you can't see through it?
I love it.
Oh, geez. Yeah, no, that beer is kind of dark there. You can't, yeah.
There's no Budweiser there.
No, there's no Budweiser there at all. Grain Belt, Minnesota.
This isn't bad.
No.
I like Grain Belt. Every once in a while.
Uh-huh.
All right, next one. Baby Got Bock.
Well, I'm going to continue my story. I'm just going to say yes to this one because I like it, that name again.
Horny Goat Brewing in Milwaukee.
Nice. Yep. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Horny Goat.
They got it all going down there.
Yeah. I mean, do they?
Okay. And my last one here for you. You Don't Win Friends with Salad.
Oh, that's like everything I would hate in a beer. I will say no.
You would hate friends and you'd hate salad, really? Both?
And beer.
Spiteful Brewing from Chicago.
They just, is it grass clippings? What is it?
well, yes, it's an IPA. So, yes.
It's IPA. It's probably a wet hop IPA. It tastes like salad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So you were doing well at the beginning there, and then you had a couple of missteps. But overall, pretty good showing, I have to say.
Yeah.
Joe, that pretty much sums up your entire career, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I saw it.
Oh, good enough. All right. Well, we're going to call that a wrap. So thanks for joining us, Joe.
Yes, thank you, Joe.
We'll see how people respond to this to see whether you come back or not. But
is there like a thumbs up, thumbs down counting poll going on?
Well, we're not supposed to talk about it.
Or is it when you lose all your Patreon members, that's when you're like, ooh.
It's like Fight Club. Well, I mean, so the only other like Gorse Valley alum we've had on the show is Dan. So you got to beat. Got to beat the Dan Drying episodes.
Oh, you do. That's, I'm sorry. I mean, I can't put myself up to that standard. I mean, one, I didn't have six drinks during the taping.
True. Well, actually, during that first episode, Dan had three Manhattans, so that probably helped.
I just sat back and listened after a while. I mean, that was, oh my goodness. Joe, if you come back, you know, as a resident chemist, I want to do a whole episode on the best delivery mechanisms. The best delivery mechanisms for Iocane powder. I want your input on how we get that.
I think the obvious answer is drone, but
drone. Okay.
Yeah, drone.
Drone.
But we'll work on it.
Excellent.
This is one of the finest things I've ever put in my mouth.